It is a privilege to be here today, passing on to you not only the teachings of my great teacher, Shomyo Suzuki Roshi, but by passing on the meaning of his teachings, giving meaning to the practice of all of the Buddhist ancestors, all the way back to Shakyamuni Buddha. As you know, today is the final talk, and I didn't really plan it this way, but it's a perfect subject for a final talk, which is basically non-attachment. But non-attachment in the context of giving. And it's Dogen Zenji who said, to give is non-attachment, that is not just not to attach to anything, is to give. It means not to be attached to something is to be aware of its absolute value. So each thing, each human being, each everything has an absolute value in the world in and of itself. And it's separate and much more true value than the value we associate with something. And so Dogen goes on to say that everything we do should be based on such an awareness and not on material or self-centered ideas of value. And of course, we operate in the world exactly the opposite. The only thing we consider is our self-centered values. But the truth is that each and everything is utterly, magnificently valuable in and of itself without even having anything to do with our self-centered values. So then Suzuki Roshi goes on and says, every existence in nature, in the human world, in the cultural world, in the artistic world, is something which has been given to us. But since everything is originally one, we're in actuality giving out everything. So everything is one. So we can't say, I'm giving to you. It's like giving is reality itself. Moment after moment, we are creating something, but this I, which is creating and always giving something, it's not the small I, it's the big I. And even though we do not realize the oneness of the big I with all beings and things, when we give something, we feel good because at that time we feel at one with the interconnected world of mutual giving and receiving. And that's always happening, even if we're not aware of it. Dana Prajna Paramita, that's what it's called. This constant giving and receiving that goes on even when we're not aware of it. Dana Prajna Paramita is the first of the six ways of true living, the six paramitas, giving, ethics, another word for ethics is Buddhist precepts, patience, constant joyful effort, and then the last two are meditation and wisdom. But in this list that I have today, it's called Zen practice and wisdom. So Zen practice is named as the fifth of the six paramitas. Instead of meditation, I guess that means zazen. Actually, these six prajnaparamitas are one, but as we can observe life from various sides, we count six. So they're all the same, actually. Dogen says to give is non-attachment. That is not just not to attach to anything, is to give. If given in the spirit of non-attachment, material offering and Dharma offering have the same value With the right spirit, all that we do and create is Dana Paramita. So to participate in human activity is Dana Prajnaparamita. To provide a ferry boat for people is Dana Prajnaparamita. Actually, to give one line of teaching may be to make a ferry boat for somebody. Suzuki Roshi says, and this is so, I love when he talks about Christianity. So he says, according to Christianity, every existence in nature is something which was created for or given to us by God. That is the perfect idea of giving. But if you think that God created man and that you are somehow separate from God, you are liable to think that you have the ability to create something separate, something not given by him. The hymn is Suzuki Roshi's word. For instance, we create airplanes and highways. And when we repeat, I create, I create, I create, soon we forget who is actually the I which creates the various things. Soon we forget about God. This is the danger of human culture. Actually, to create with a big I is to give. We cannot create and own what we create for ourselves, since everything was created by God. This is just a different way of saying the same thing Dogen said 1 second ago. And Suzuki Roshi continues, this point should not be forgotten, but because we do forget who is doing the creating and the reason for the creating, we become attached to the material or exchange value. This has no value in comparison to the absolute value of something as God's creation. Even though something has no material or relative value to any small I, it has absolute value in itself. Not to be attached to something is to be aware of its absolute value. Everything you do should be based on such an awareness and not on material or self-centered ideas of value. Then whatever you do is true giving, is Dana Prajna Paramita. Everything we do, if it's given in the spirit of understanding the absolute value. Roshi goes on to describe three kinds of creation. The first is self-awareness after Zazen, which means emerging from nothing. So we're sitting Zazen, and when as soon as it's over and we come to stand, let's say, emerging from nothing, that's one kind of creation. And he calls it non-attachment. And the second is food preparation. He separates that out. Food preparation is another kind of creation. And thirdly, creating something from within oneself, like education, culture, or art. But he says, if we forget the first most important one, the Zazen one, the other two will be like children who have lost their parents. Their creation will mean nothing. If you understand Dana Prajnaparamita, you will understand how it is we create so many problems for ourselves. Of course, to live is to create problems. This is Suzuki Roshi talking. If we did not appear in this world, our parents would have no difficulty with us. Usually people think that when they die, everything is over, the problems disappear, but your death may create problems too. Actually, our problems should be solved or dissolved in this life. But if we are aware that what we do and what we create is really the gift of the big I, then we will not be attached to it, and we will not create problems for ourselves or others. And we should not forget day by day what we have done. This is true non-attachment. And we should do something new. We should not keep holding on to anything we have done. We should only reflect on it. That's really important. It's okay to reflect on what we've done and maybe make meaning from it or gather lessons from it, but not to attach to it. And we must have some idea of what we should do in the future. But the future is the future, the past is the past. Now we should work on something new. This is our attitude and how we should live in this world. This is Dana Prajnamita, to give something or create something for ourselves. So to do something through and through is to resume our true activity of creation. This is why we sit. If we do not forget this point, everything will be carried on beautifully. But once we forget this point, the world will be filled with confusion. One way to help us remember is to limit our activity. Usually, when someone believes in a particular religion, his attitude becomes more and more a sharp angle pointing away from himself, like a statue of a holy person or a picture of a holy being. But in our way, the point of the angle is always toward ourselves, always. In Zen practice, it's always toward yourself. So as long as you have some particular goal in your practice, that practice will not help you completely. It may help as long as you are directed toward the goal, but when you resume your everyday life, it will not work. You may think that if there is no purpose or goal in our practice, we'll not know what to do. But the way to practice without having any goal is to limit your activity or to be concentrated on what you are doing in the moment. That's another idea about limiting your activity. If you're just focused on what you're doing this minute, you're limiting your activity to this minute. When your mind is wandering about elsewhere, you have no chance to express yourself. But if you limit your activity to what you can do just now in this moment, then you can express fully your true nature, which is the universal Buddha nature. This is our way. When we practice Zazen, we limit our activity to the smallest extent, just keeping the right posture and being concentrated on sitting is how we express the universal nature. Then we become Buddha and we express Buddha nature. When we bow, we should just bow. When we sit, we should just sit. When we eat, we should just eat. If we do this, the universal nature is there. In Japanese, it is called Ichigyo Zamai. Zamai or samadhi is concentration. Ichigyo is one practice. So it's one practice concentration or one practice samadhi. That's what we're doing. And I'm reassociating again to this idea of when we eat, we should just eat. And I'm just remembering how many people that I'm aware of who they can't eat. They won't sit down to dinner without their cell phones there, even if they're having a family meal, a precious opportunity to be with loved ones. Nope. Cell phone has to be there, which is the message of, anything's more important than you. Anyway, it's a pet peeve, as you know, of mine. Our practice is for everyone. And our way is to point toward ourselves, not away from ourselves, like toward a statue of the Buddha. We don't do that. We point toward ourselves, not toward the statue of the Buddha. But the secret of our practice is that wherever you go, you yourself are boss. No matter what the situation, you cannot neglect Buddha because you yourself are Buddha. Only this Buddha will help you completely. Only the Buddha that's you yourself will help you completely. That's why we don't point away. We point back to ourselves. Related to this subject of is the subject of Zen and excitement. Roshi said, Zen is not some kind of excitement, but concentration on our usual everyday routine. If possible, Roshi says, we should try to be always calm and joyful and keep ourselves from excitement. If our mind is calm and constant, even in our busy lives, we will always be in touch with the one who is not busy. And Roshi says, do not be too interested in Zen. When young people get excited about Zen, they often give up schooling and go to some mountain or forest in order to sit. That kind of interest is not true interest. It's more like curiosity. Just to continue in our calm, ordinary practice, or our character will be built up. If our mind is always busy, there will be no time to build and we will not be successful, particularly if we work too hard on it. Building character is like baking bread. A moderate temperature is needed. We know exactly what temperature we need, but if we get too excited, we'll forget how much is good and lose our way. Regarding that, I know someone who wants me to teach her about Zen, and we begin a conversation about a new development in her relationship with her sister, for example, and she gets impatient. Why? Because she values her time with me and she wants me to tell her things about Zen. But this is one of your most important relationships, I point out. Don't you want to study it carefully? Oh, yes, but I want to be sure I get everything I can from my time with you. So here is someone receiving exactly what she wants, but she's so concerned that she won't, that she almost misses the opportunity. That is, she thinks about what she thinks she knows what learning about Zen is, which is perhaps informational. And when she just gets help in how to live her life, it feels off topic. Studying the way, she loses the way. Why? Because she thinks she knows what the way is. This is very dangerous. We don't see the way with our heads. We don't see the way with our heads. So if you think you know what the way is, back off, slow down, limit your activity, and give another shot to understanding the way, which is just to just do the next thing right in front of you, wholeheartedly, with entire attention. Roshi adds, Buddha also said that building character is like building a dam. You should be very careful in making the bank. If you try to do it all at once, water will leak from it. Make the bank carefully, and you will end up with a fine dam for the reservoir. This makes sense if one realizes that by practicing Zen, one is building character. What is character? Strength, fortitude, wisdom, perseverance. These are all qualities that accrue over time with a variety of experiences. They require self-study, other study, thoughtfulness, and integration. All very plain, but not boring. In fact, though it may sound like gradual attainment, it is the sudden way, because our practice is common ordinary. Everyday life is enlightenment. That's a kind of neat little shift he makes. This is all Suzuki Roshi. We think of it as the gradual way, but actually it's the sudden way, because everything we do, if we do it with a proper attitude and understanding, is enlightenment. There is the teaching, when you do something, you should burn yourself completely, like a good bonfire, leaving no trace. Before we act, we think. This thinking leaves some trace. Our activity is shadowed by some preconceived idea. It not only leaves some trace, it gives us other notions about other activities and beings and things. All of this makes our minds very complicated, and our activities will not be strong and straightforward as they are when our minds are without notions or shadows. To deepen this point, Roshi refers to the saying, to catch two birds with one stone, which he says is what most people try to do. Because they want to catch too many birds, they find it difficult to be concentrated on one activity and may end up not catching any. This kind of thinking leaves a shadow. The shadow is not actually the thinking itself. It's often necessary to think before we act. It's true. But right thinking does not leave any shadow. Thinking which leaves traces comes out of our relative confused mind. Relative mind is the mind which sets itself in relation to other things, thus limiting itself. It is the small mind which creates gaining ideas and leaves traces of itself. What's more, if we leave traces, we become attached to the traces. For example, you may say, "This is what I have done." But actually, it is not so. That is never really what happened. When we think in this way, we limit the actual experience of what we have done. When we attach to the idea of what we have done, we are involved in selfish ideas. This is very unique, what he's saying right here. And he elaborates by giving an example of an old person proudly telling something he has done. But when people hear this, they feel funny because they know his recollection is one-sided. They know that what he has told them is not exactly what he did. Plus, if he is proud, that pride will create a problem for him. Repeating his recollections in this way, his personality will be twisted more and more. We should not forget what we did, but it should be without an extra trace. It is necessary to remember what we have done, but we should not become attached to it in some special sense. What we call attachment is just these traces of our thought and activity. In order not to leave traces, we must do whatever we do with our whole body and mind. We should be very concentrated. Like a good bonfire, we should burn ourselves out, just burn ourselves out completely. Don't save anything. Burn yourself out, whatever you're doing. If we do not burn ourselves completely, a trace of ourselves will be left in what we do. Zen activity is activity which is completely burned, with nothing remaining but ashes. When this kind of activity takes place, one activity covers everything. So basically, he's saying, if you do Zazen with your whole heart and mind, that activity covers everything. But I think you can say that for any activity that you do completely with your whole heart and mind. And then when you do that, you'll actually experience leaving no trace. You can tell. You can tell when you leave a trace. Roshi says, if you practice Zazen with your whole body and mind, even for a moment, that is Zazen. If you understand this point, all the dualistic thinking and all the problems of life will vanish. Some activity which covers everything is true activity, and the secret of this activity is transmitted from Buddha to us. This is Zen practice, not some teaching taught by Buddha or some rules of life set up for him. The teaching or the rules should be changed according to the place or to the people who observe them. But the secret of this practice cannot be changed. It is always true. So I'm going to repeat that in my own words. He's saying, Buddhism is not about rules. It's not about anything you hear that Buddhism teaches this or that, or that has this philosophy or that idea. Buddhism is simply 100% burning yourself completely, whatever you're doing. That's Buddhism. And we can burn ourselves completely in whatever we're doing endlessly for the rest of our life. And we don't need to know anything else. Just burn yourself completely with whatever you're doing. And that's the truth of Buddhism, and that cannot be changed. But rules might need to be changed if the circumstances they're about change, or some philosophy might change if the basis of our existence changes. But the idea of continuous, wholehearted, burn yourself completely practice will not change. That's what Roshi is saying. So for us, there is no other way to live in this world. Its great value must be discovered. Usually when something is simple, we say, oh, I know that. It's quite simple. Everyone knows that. But if we do not find its value, it means nothing. So he's saying, oh, I know I should do everything burning myself completely. I already know that. You don't need to say it again. But if you don't actually do it and find the meaning in it with your own body and mind, it doesn't mean anything. It's not just a piece of knowledge you can file away with all your other pieces of knowledge. It's not the same as knowing. It's not the same as knowing. Buddhism is not about knowing. That's why beginner's mind is so important. We need to not know. And then, oh, that's Buddhism right there. There should be no traces in our activity. We should not attach to some fancy idea or some beautiful things. We should not seek for something good. The truth is always near at hand, within your reach. Just want to let this sit for a minute. And then I'll read the most important points, but just I feel this what Suzuki Roshi said here is so important. It's just the essence. It's the essence of everything I've said in all 127 talks that we've had. That it all boils down to this. So the most important points from today, first, there are five of them. Moment after moment, we are creating something. But this I, which is creating and always giving something out, is not the small I, it is the big I. Even though we do not realize the oneness of the big I with all beings and things, when we give something, we feel good, because at that time, we feel at one with the interconnected world of mutual giving and receiving that is always happening, even if we aren't aware of it. I didn't realize that the small I and big I is Suzuki Roshi's original concept. I didn't know that. I don't know why I didn't know that, but I just found that out recently. It's such a helpful concept, I find. Okay, the second most important point. Though something has no material or relative value to any small I, it has absolute value in itself. Not to be attached to something is to be aware of its absolute value. Everything you do should be based on such an awareness and not on material or self-centered ideas of value. Then whatever you do is true giving, is dana prajna paramita. Third, and we should forget day by day what we have done. This is true non-attachment, and we should do something new. We should not keep holding on to anything we have done. We should only reflect on it. And we must have some idea of what we should do in the future. And fourth, Roshi adds, Buddha also said that building character is like building a dam. You should be very careful in making the bank. If you try to do it all at once, water will leak from it. Make the bank carefully, and you will end up with a fine dam for the reservoir. And fifth, it is often necessary to think before we act, but right thinking does not leave any shadow. Thinking which leaves traces comes out of our relative confused mind. Relative mind is the mind which sets itself in relation to other things, like competition, for example, thus limiting itself. It is this small mind which creates gaining ideas and leaves traces of itself. I just want to add that that doesn't mean that you can never compete. But your attitude, so for example, I have a friend who's a cyclist, and it's cycling season now, and she does all these competitions, weekly. And her attitude is, I'm gonna just go for it, which is a great attitude. And simultaneously, she couldn't care less if she wins. It's not about winning. It's about her absolute huge effort in the moment. And then who cares? So with this attitude of huge in the moment effort, it doesn't mean, well, I can't have a competitive sport, or I can't do whatever you're thinking of. You can do everything. But Roshi is suggesting that the way to get the way to do something without attachment is to do it like burning your whole self out with each and every moment, and not to save anything for the next time. Don't save anything for the next time. And I know for writers, they say, if you're going to write a book, put it all in this book. Don't save anything for the next book. Just all in this book. So I think I've made that point. Let's see. I want to give you an idea for your reflection this week. When Shakyamuni Buddha was alive, his legacy included his 10 foremost disciples. That is, for every primary value, there emerged one of his students who excelled in that thing above and beyond all the other students. So for example, Shariputra was foremost in wisdom. And there was another disciple foremost in spreading the Dharma. So there'll be a certain value, and one student was foremost in that. And what I'd like you to think about this week as a suggestion is pretend there's something called foremost in ordinariness. And if you wanted to compete for that, what would you say about yourself? So now you get to compete, for the foremost in ordinariness prize. What would be, and you're going to write a letter to show how you deserve the foremost in ordinariness prize. What would be your letter? I have an example here of one person about being foremost disciple in ordinariness. And this will all be posted, but this is someone who lives in a Zen community, so it may not pertain, but I'll read it anyway. I find that the thing that interests me most is the details of my daily life. For example, what I choose to do on day off is wash my sheets, refill my soap bottles in the shower, put Drano down the bathroom sink, choose some books to give away, repurpose some of my clothing. Those five things. Some of my friends go swim in the ocean or watch shorebirds feed, but if I did that at the expense of my five things, I'd feel very frustrated. So that's one person's idea of an application for foremost in ordinariness. So what would be yours? I'm torn. I want to give you time to think of questions, but I also am aware this will be my last chance to answer them. So maybe we should call for questions now.
Yes, Gail. So we have a few questions. So here's one. I'm having difficulty distinguishing between holding on, which is bad, and reflecting, which is okay. What are the differences between these two?
Okay. Let's use these Dharma talks as an example. So holding on would be, you know, just finding the fact that we're not going to have them anymore, really difficult to accept, and not being able to think about not having this kind of support, and continuing still with your Zen practice. That's one way. And then reflecting is reflecting on what was valuable about being able to have some kind of group support for your Zen practice most Sundays, and maybe what wasn't so valuable about the experience. So you reflect on it, and you can maybe identify what you want to keep and what you want to discard. And that's all. And then that's reflecting. And then attachment is this kind of longing or hanging on or clinging to something that is going to end. I'm just giving you an example, but it really holds for everything. And especially, I think, when we have a loved one who just died or who is dying, it's very hard to not be attached. And I think that's maybe the hardest situation. But the most we can do toward reflecting on everything that was wonderful and then letting go is probably the best way for not only yourself, but the person dying. I'm just using that as an example. I think that's all. It's a good question, though. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. Another one that we have is, not to be attached to something is to be aware of its absolute value. I actually don't understand what this means.
It means that everything has an absolute value in and of itself, just in being that thing, and that everything that comes to you is a gift. I'm thinking, let's say you're walking down the street and you see a penny in the gutter. That penny has absolute value in and of itself. It has absolute value as an existing sentient being. Or even insentient being. And it comes to you as a gift. It doesn't belong to you. It belongs to all beings. And when you have that awareness of it belongs to all beings, it lessens the sense of attachment. Well, this belongs to everybody. You know, the penny is everyone's. And so that element of mind weakens. It and this point of view requires you to see Suzuki Roshi's big eye and small eye, and seeing the interconnectedness of all things. That's the big eye, and we grasp this best in zazen. It's very hard. We cannot grasp big eye with our thinking minds. We have to use zazen or something equivalent to zazen to understand the big eye. But the big eye is the absolute value. I hope that helped. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. So the next one that we have is, I have trouble understanding exactly what is meant by leaving no trace. Giving your all in a marathon or in writing a book makes sense as examples of leaving no trace. Could you give an example of what leaving a trace would be in an ordinary task?
I think I gave a really good example last week or recently, which was all written out actually in your idea for reflection during the week. It was the example of a Chekhov story where one person, a doctor, his 6-year-old child had just died, and then another person knocked on his door and said, "Would you come immediately? My wife is dying. I need you to come immediately." And so, long story short, the doctor goes, and the wife was really using that as her sickness as an excuse to get rid of him while she ran off with another man. So then they had this big fight, the doctor and the man. They had a huge fight, like, "What am I doing here? You called me away from in my own horror." And then so they fought, and finally the doctor got home and then reflects on everything. And Chekhov says, over time, he understood his side of things and he understood the other man's side of things, and all of that kind of calmed down. But what he didn't ever drop was the impression that he made during the fight. He made a judgment about the doctor. You know, this guy's an idiot. Well, how did he call me out in my emergency for nothing? There's nothing here. Blah, blah, blah. That's leaving a trace. That's the trace, is all the thoughts that the doctor made about the man while they were fighting didn't ever leave him. He never changed his opinion of the man. He might have changed, I understand why he did it, or I understand why I went and all that, but he didn't change his impression. And Chekhov is saying, you know, we human beings do this all the time. I thought that was a great example of leaving a trace. We just, okay, and I'll give you some other examples that come immediately to mind, that you leave dishes in the sink. That's a perfect example of leaving traces. Someone else walks in the kitchen and they already know, you know, you've been there and you didn't clean up after yourself. That's leaving a trace. Or, and you can apply that to probably, you know, for almost anything. Not making your bed in the morning is leaving a trace. We should finish each, I mean, according to our Zen way of life, we do something and we complete what we do before we move on to the next thing. So you sleep in your bed and then you make your bed. No one can tell you even slept in your bed. Then you make breakfast and you eat breakfast. and you clean up the kitchen, and no one can tell you even had breakfast in the kitchen, and so forth throughout your day in every single thing you do. That's burning yourself completely, and that's leaving no trace. And it takes a certain kind of effort. You have to have a clear mind. You have to not have too many activities so that you're like frantic at the end and like, oh, I don't have time for that. No, just get me out of here. Those are traces. You know, the get me out of here attitude, you're guaranteed to leave a trace. Here's another one of forgetting your keys then. Get me out of here, and you walk out and you don't have your keys. So that's a big trace, because then you have to retrace your steps and make up for your absent-mindedness. I don't need to have, I think that's made it makes it clear what leaving the trace is. But thank you. I think a lot of people have that question.
Thank you, Gail. The next one is, if our mind is calm and constant, even in our busy lives, we will always be in touch with the one who's not busy. Is there always one who's not busy?
Yes. The one who is not busy is Buddha nature. The Buddha nature in you, which is really all of you, is not busy. But we cover it over with our spinning monkey minds, as they say. So we always have the mind that is not busy. It's always there and it's always accessible even, but you have to stop. You have to stop. It's a really good practice. It's an excellent Zen practice to set a timer, even if you have to, you know, once an hour. Your timer goes off, you go, where's the one who is not busy? Then you get in touch with it and then continue. It's basically your Zazen mind. But you can get in touch with your Zazen mind at all times. And the more you do Zazen, the more it'll just be there behind whatever you do without so much effort. But that's, I think you can reach a point where you're always in touch with the one who is not busy. It goes the other way. You're let's say almost always in touch with the person, the one in you who is not busy, and only sometimes are you so busy that you forget. So it can switch, 180 degree switch. Thank you. I think we have time for at least one more question.
Thank you, Gail. So the next one is, when we attach to the idea of what we have done, we are involved in selfish ideas, but how do we put our whole heart into something and not feel attached?
The answer to that is involves being attached, but attached to a different thing. So I'm recommending that you attach instead of to the result of the thing, attach to the enormous effort, minute by minute, that you make to accomplish the thing. So when you attach, let's say, if that's going to help you, to focus on the quality of your effort, and you make burning out completely effort, burning yourself completely effort, there is no leftover. There's no trace, and there's no idea of yourself, oh, I did that. It's just the doing of it. You are just the doing. It's like the doing did the doing. And they say that Zazen does Zazen. And they even say, they being the great ones, say, and Dogen says, we should be, enlightenment happens before enlightenment. We're enlightened before enlightenment. Zazen does Zazen. So the thing itself does the thing itself. And there's, you don't, forget the I, forget I altogether. We don't need that. So, and if there's no I involved, there's no trace. When Zazen does Zazen, there's no trace. When enlightenment happens before enlightenment, there's no trace. Because there's no you. There's no you there. That's what Zen practice is about. And I think it's a good note to end on. It's very sad to end being with you this way. It's so intimate, and I so appreciate the fact of your presence has allowed these talks to happen. I'm very grateful, and I encourage you to listen to them again, honestly. It's like reading a book a second time, which I do all the time, and always get more out of it the second time. And just for today, I again thank my staff, Brian and Sahar and Brendan, for making all of this possible. And everything will be left up for you to access whenever you think about it. I wish you all the very best and the very best Zen practice possible. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.